weeknights from 6 on 2FM.
Well, a big thanks to Beto da Silva and all the team for driving us through the afternoon. It is Wednesday, August 7th. I'm Shane Dawson and you are listening to Game On. Coming up between now and 7pm, Damien O'Mara joins us live from the Paris Olympics with the latest from Team Ireland athletics, golf, sailing and taekwondo. And of course, we'll be continuing the celebrations as Kelly Harrington secures her place in Irish history, sporting history, legendary status for Kelly Harrington and Dublin One. Aoife Murray previews the clash of Cork and Galway in Sunday's All-Ireland Camogie final, while Keith Tracy has the latest association football news both domestically and across Europe. We'll also round up all of today's sports news headlines. As always, if you want to get in touch, you can send us a text on 51552 or message us on WhatsApp 087 187 9200.
Game on 2FM.
Good evening. Welcome along to the show. An hour of sport ahead on 2FM. Keith Tracy is already in studio. We're chatting football a little bit later, Keith, but what an evening. What an evening. There's no other place to start with other than Kelly. It's nearly 24 hours later. Who cares?
Yeah, me neighbour. Just the other side of the five lamps for me.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, it's brilliant, isn't it, to see somebody who's so inspirational to young girls. I always say this in the football, in terms when the Irish women did so well getting to the World Cup, it really lit a fire under my young girls to go out and get a little bit more active. And they're looking at Kelly now in the Olympics and she's just gone from strength to strength. And watching the fight last night, my heart was in my mouth. I couldn't bring myself to go up to the diamond. I just couldn't do it. So I sat at home and I watched it because I like listening to the commentary of it and trying to get a feel for it. So I watched it at home. My heart was in my mouth. But yeah, she was excellent. Absolutely brilliant on the back foot. And just a classy, classy boxer. Brilliant to watch and so humble all the time around the area. It's great to see.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It was great scenes in Diamond Park. Marie actually was down in Diamond Park for television coverage. You mentioned the commentary, Hugh and Eric Donovan as well. Because I wouldn't be a boxing expert. And that's I'd be the same as you. Yeah. I was listening out and just the kind of technical terms, and you get the feel of it a lot more. Like for football or maybe other sports or hurling or Gaelic football even, you can kind of just watch it on mute and you know what's happening. Whereas boxing, it is a bit more technical.
You go up to the Diamond Park and you're listening to somebody roaring and shouting and you're taking his word as gospel. Yeah. Now, I've been to one live rugby match in my life and I was totally out of my depth when there was nobody telling me the rules there, so I learned my lesson. But
what match was that?
That was the champions. It was in Croke Park, Leinster against Northampton.
Oh,
is that
okay.
Right?
Oh, yeah, the big ones.
Yeah, yeah. I only go to the big ones. Yeah,
it's
the only rugby game I've ever been to, but really enjoyed it. But a little bit out of my depth that time. Not really sure what was going on.
Well, a man who knows rugby inside out and plenty of other sports too is Damien O'Mara, who was in Paris. Damien, are the celebrations still continuing over Kelly Harrington?
You're clearly mistaking me with someone else. do you know what? I was there. I was lucky to be there, and it was a fantastic privilege to be there, and it was a great night. You know the odd thing is, like, so she wasn't in the ring until 11:30 French time, there or thereabouts, and like it was maybe 1:30 by the time a lot of people left, and you're on the metro on the way back, and it's just like a whole load of happy Irish heads, and you're kind of all nodding at each other in mutual appreciation of what has been like the greatest of nights. You know, you talked there about the tension. It's so odd because I don't think there was ever any doubt in anyone's mind who was there that she was going to win it. And people keep saying to me, oh my God, it was so tense watching it. And all of us that were there were so relaxed because I think we just had this supreme confidence and belief that once she had got over Ferreira in the semi-final, nobody was going to stop her.
It is that release and that relief that we saw from Kelly as well, that you could probably feel around the stadium. I'm so jealous for you, Damien, basically, as well. I don't even have a question. I'm just jealous. That's basically
true. Listen, you know, it's come here. Sometimes you're lucky enough to be at the, you know, I've used the same line time and time again. Like, the greatest pleasure of what we do is bringing stories like that to people and being able to be there and to pinch yourself and in 10 or 15 or 20 years' time to look back and go, oh my God, like this iconic moment, I was there. And do you know what? The emotion that released out of her, someone said to me this morning, like, she'll be back. And I was like, no, she's done. She's absolutely finished. And you could see with the dancing and the celebrations and the interactions between herself and Zor and Damien Kennedy and other people that they knew they had an Everest to climb, and they climbed Everest last night, and there's nowhere else to go.
Yeah. No, a brilliant night for boxing, for Dublin One, Keith, for Irish sport in general. Speaking of Irish sport in general, lots to reflect on today as well, Damien.
Yeah, busy day, ongoing, day 12. The track and field action really is continuing to dominate in terms of the talking points of the game. So we've medals on offer in the stadium tonight in the women's pole vault, the men's discus, the 400 metres in the men and the men's 3,000 metre steeplechase. The session there has got underway a short time ago. We're going to chat to Jessie Barr presently about tonight's focus from an Irish perspective, which will be Rashida Adeleke, who goes in the first of three semi-finals in the women's 400 metres. They're set to go off at around 7.45 Irish time, but a number of Irish athletes in action already in the morning session. Sarah Lavin finished second in her heat in the women's 100 metres hurdle, clocking 12.73 to be 12th overall into Friday morning's semi-final. And after her heat today, she spoke with Jackie Hurley.
Yeah, a relief. To be honest, you know, a big queue is what was up for grabs today. To get that safely, securely, in an event like the hurdles, that it's just, you know, you want to push, you have to push it, and yet you have to stay clean race. So, yeah, I'm so glad to have got going, because I think if I met another person in the team trying to gauge whether I'd started or not, and they just hadn't heard, because they Wednesday.
I know, I think that's because, you know, when you're here from the opening ceremony, and you obviously had such a big role there, and then you're waiting, and there's so many brilliant performances in Team Ireland, you just can't wait to get going.
I know, that's it, and like, what a special team it's been. Thankfully, when I went into the village for the opening ceremony, I was only there for 2 or 3 days, and then I went down to Fontainebleau and trained, and it was a lot more calm and peaceful there, which it was needed, you know.
Well, I tell you what, there's a lot of Irish people here to see you, because when you took to the blocks there, the atmosphere in here is unbelievable, isn't it?
Oh, it's incredible, and thank you so much to everyone. Look, I'm getting more waves, and it just, it's so special, and it means the world to us. You know, we train every day of our lives to be here, but people are travelling here and to support you, it's, I have no words for it, to be honest with you.
So, well, you're repaying them in spades, because you've always been a championship performer. To go and run like that, to beat Kumbunji, I mean, that's got to give you massive confidence.
Yeah, it's the first round, you know. I think, like, it's reset, and the slates are blank again next round. You're looking there at maybe, like, what's the top 8 time today.
Yeah.
Of course, that's very doable, but everyone, you have to have a clean race and go again, and all I could get this morning was a big queue, so we have that, but it's gonna, that was the scariest round, the next one's the toughest to get into that final.
At Sarah Lavin, everyone loves Sarah Lavin. Mark English, very impressive. He finished second in his heat of the men's 800 metres, a time of 1:45.15 seconds. He's ranked 7th overall ahead of the semi-final on Friday morning.
It is nice, it's my best finish ever in an Olympic Games, so it's lovely to do it at this point in my career, and I'm really happy with that race.
I think when you go to your third Olympic Games, you know what the fanfare is going to be like, but that just looked like a quintessential vintage Mark English performance.
Yeah, I'm feeling in really good shape, and I've always believed in myself throughout the whole season. I've ran PBs over every distance I've raced, so I knew it was there, I just had to piece it together.
That's it, Mark, you seem to be in the form of your life. As you said, you've ran the fastest time this season, you just look so comfortable out there.
Yeah, I feel good. The only issue is everybody's running well over 800 metres at the minute, but it's a challenge we're looking forward to, going into that semi-final against all them guys.
Yeah, as you say, everybody looks like they were running well, real tactical race, but at the end you just had enough, you just looked like you picked your moment well.
Yeah, look, I stayed behind Massanila, I figured he'd be one to watch out for, so thankfully I got a little bit of a gap with 100 to go, and I moved out and clinched second place, so delighted with that.
Just looking around the place here, Mark, you know, Team Ireland is out in full force. The stadium has been rocking, hasn't it?
Yeah, like I looked over at the start line and I saw Irish flags waving, and that support's immense, like really, really helpful. So just thrilled to get it, and I know I'll be there again in the semi-final, so I'm going to have to step up and run my best race again.
Yeah, another big fight ahead, but no doubt you're really looking forward to it.
Yeah, really looking forward to it. So just getting back now and getting rest and recovered and etc. So yeah, looking forward to it.
That's Mark English. Brian Fay was 13th in heat 2 of the men's 1500 metres, 13.55.35. It ranked him 13th overall. It was a straight qualification. The top 8 from each heat advanced to the finals. And here is evidence of the peculiarity that can exist at the Olympics. His time was faster than all 8 qualifiers from the other heat. But disappointingly for him, he doesn't advance. And afterwards, he spoke with David Gillick.
Today, I just wanted to, irrespective of qualifying, obviously it was the goal, was to try and make the final, you know. And obviously I came in, I didn't have a great European, so I was just trying to get, I got momentum in the last couple of races coming in here. And yeah, look, it's disappointing obviously not to make the final, but look, I wanted to just not fall off on that when the pace came at 3K, and I held on, and then I got dropped, and then I thought I'd be able to come back in the last lap, but you're already stinging at that stage, you know. But look, like, to call a spade, I'm just not good enough at the minute to get to the final, like, you know. But I think I'm just going to keep coming, I keep showing up, and I'm going to get it right eventually, you know. And, you know, you want to be able to show up and say you take the start line and you'd be a force to be reckoned with, irrespective of it being a heat or a final or whatever it is, you know. And if it takes me a couple of years, I'm going to keep showing up, I'm going to keep doing it, I'm going to keep, even if I fail, it's fine, but I'm just going to keep going until I get it right. And I'm gonna make a major championship final one of these days, like, you know. And I'll be a force to reckon with in that as well. So, look, it's mixed emotions. Honestly, like, I was probably ranked in and around there coming in anyway. So it's like, you take it as it is, you just want a big jump, and it didn't happen today. But look, Fred, it's hard to come here into the Olympic Village. There's a lot going on. First time as an Olympian, so hopefully in 4 years' time we can come back again. But, like, Worlds next year, hopefully I can come back and keep knocking on that door and get it right next time, so.
Elsewhere, Sophie O'Sullivan and Sarah Healy both finished just one place outside the qualification spots in the repechage of the women's 1500 metres, both fourth in their run. Sophie in 4:03.73, Sarah ran 4:07.60, and a very emotional Sophie spoke afterwards with David.
Yeah, I mean, I really thought I could make it there, and it's a little bit disappointing just not have the extra gear. I've not wanted to be crying as soon as I'm done, but...
It's emotion out there, and it was so gutsy, but, like, it's a 4:03, okay? Yeah, you didn't qualify, but you came in here with a 4:05, 4 minutes yesterday, you've come back with a 4:03, and you gave it absolutely everything. You've got to be proud of that.
I'm really proud of it. I think, you set big goals, and, you know, it's just, you know, the luck doesn't fall your way, so... what can you do?
Well, look, it's tough because this year you've had a few injury problems. You know, you've come back, you started racing probably late in the season, and yet you've still come out with, like, a massive PB.
Yeah, I mean, I've probably had, you know, 4 months-ish prep for this, and so it's really, you know, great to see that I can still compete, you know, even when things aren't perfect, which is, I think, great. And, yeah, you know, that's... you know, really good time, because I think I can do more for sure, yeah.
Like, it's hard now because it's all very raw and you'll evaluate it, but, like, it's been a great experience for yourself, this Olympics, yeah?
Oh, yeah, it's great out here, and, like, it's great to see all the Irish flags and everyone smiling, you know, they're having fun, so I guess that's what it's all about, so, yeah.
That's Sophie O'Sullivan with David Gillick. So attention from an Irish perspective at the stadium now switches to Rashida Adeleke, who goes in the first of the women's 400 metre semi-finals. Jesse Barr is up the road from us here in the Stade de France. Jesse, evening to you.
Hi, Damien. I was hoping you'd come to me a bit quicker because we're waiting on a result for the men's 110 metre hurdles, and one of the home favourites, Sacha Zoya from France, is in it, and he's waiting to see if he's made it to the final. So if there's an eruption of noise, I apologise.
Well, listen, don't be worrying about that. Isn't it great to be there, and isn't it great to see that the home fans have got so behind these games? There's so much focus on Rashida, perhaps unfavourably so. We need to put all these things into context. She's been a brilliant NCAA athlete, she's been a brilliant European athlete, she has proven herself capable of smashing every barrier that's in front of her, but these Olympic Games are a gear change, albeit we can be very confident ahead of the semi-final this evening.
Look, absolutely, I mean, Rashida, there hasn't been a major championship final except the Olympics that Rashida hasn't featured in, so she has those credentials. Just, there is extra weight that comes with the Olympic Games, those 5 extra rings just carry extra weight, they carry extra pressure. And look, they carry extra attention. People are tuning in that maybe hadn't tuned into Rashida before. She seems to be taking in her stride. Based on what she said after her heat, she was enjoying it, she was loving it. As you heard earlier, Mark and Sarah both commented on the Irish support here. I'm already seeing lots of Irish flags waving for her to come out. So look, she's absolutely capable. She was fourth at the World Championships last year. She's competed against all these girls before. It's just whether or not she can get through this round. The semi-final is often the biggest nerve, you know, it's the most nervy. Once you're in the final, anything can happen. This is the one that there's still something to lose.
And we look, you know, the analysis has been that the draw has been quite favourable to her. Like, Klaver, the Dutch athlete, is in there with her as well. Rashida, 49.07 personal and seasonal best. She is the athlete who has set the tone in terms of the evening. And in terms of mindset, do you just have to approach it that the first two are guaranteed that big cue and will advance, and you simply just have to focus on either winning this heat or being on the shoulder of the person who does?
Yeah, absolutely. Look, like you said, it is first two fastest from each, or the first two from each heat, and then the next two fastest times. You never want to be relying on those two fastest times, especially when you're like Rashida in that first heat. She needs to go out and be in that top two and guarantee herself into that final, but also in that final with a good lane. She's in lane eight. All her main competitors are inside of her in the inside lane. So she's going to be running a little bit blind for that first 200 meters, which could actually, it could benefit her in a race like this, because Rashida's game plan, Rashida's one of the fastest in the field. The only, probably the other fastest in the field is Lika Claver, who has a background in 200, just like Rashida, who actually is in Rashida's race today, Lika Claver from the Netherlands, and part of that gold medal winning 4x4 team. She tends to go out like a train. What Rashida needs to do is be using her speed and getting out as quickly as she can and hanging on, because there is other girls in these events and in this race who have a better speed endurance than Rashida, where she has all of the speed in spades compared to them. So maybe being in lane eight and being in that outside lane bar one person could actually benefit her, because she can just put the blinkers on and run her own race. Mm.
And it would be such a significant chapter for her career and for Irish athletics as well, that, you know, we're not falling down with Irish athletes who have competed in sprint finals at Olympic Games.
No, we aren't. I know my own brother Thomas competed in that 400 meter hurdles final in Rio. I think he was the first sprint. I don't know, was he the first male sprint or sprinter in general to compete in the Olympic final in about 87 years or something? Mm. So, you know, we don't get these opportunities that often, you know, to compete at the top level. There is a lot of murmurs, there's whispers about Rashida in other countries. She is, you know, she is someone who other countries like the GB, like US, they're talking about her. We're very much on her radar, we're on their radar. So if she can just carry that, she's based in the US, she's training with some of the best, she's training with Julian Alfred, who won that 100 metres the other night, so she's used to being around athletes of that calibre, and she's not a big fish in a small pond, which I think could help her tonight.
So you're confident?
I am confident. I think if she can do, you know, look, anything can happen, but I think if Rashida runs her own race and runs what she's capable of, she's absolutely capable of getting that final, and then we'll talk about the final.
We have medals to be dished out in the women's pole vault, the men's discus, the men's 3,000 metre steeplechase, and the men's 400 metres, which is going to be the big one that's going to stand out over the course of the evening. Quincy Hall, the fastest man on the planet this year, I think. Is he the man to beat?
Do you know what? I am looking at Matthew Hudson-Smith and Karani James. They're in lane 5 and 6. They're right in the middle. I think there's going to be a really interesting battle between those two. If people aren't familiar with the name Karani James, he's the only Grenadian athlete to have an Olympic medal of any colour. He won his first Olympic medal, a gold medal, back in London at the age of 19. He's a silver from Rio, a bronze from Tokyo, and he's rounding into PB shape. He's run a 43.78 this year with a PB of 43.74. I think he could do something really special. And the man who I think who could really challenge him is Matthew Hudson-Smith, the European record holder from Great Britain. He looked phenomenal in the semi-finals earlier on this week. He cruised down the last 100 metres in, I would say, second or third gear. Looked like he had loads left in the tank and ran a low 44. I think it's going to be between those two.
We'll see how it plays out. Jesse, enjoy the evening. Thanks so much for being with us, as always. Jesse Barr with us there from the Stade de France. Elsewhere today, disappointing day for the Irish golfers out at Le Golf National. Round one of the women's competition took place today. Stephanie Meadow, Leona Maguire both shot 6 over par, opening round 78. The French golfer Céline Boutier holds a 3-shot lead at 7 under par. We'll hear from Leona in just a moment, but first, Stephanie has been speaking with Darren Frehill.
I hit some better drives on the back, had some nice saves, and gave myself some birdie opportunities, not many, but it was nice to finish on 18 there with a birdie. That's probably the most daunting second shot on a par 5 I've ever had, and only had 5 iron in my hand, so it was nice to kind of pull that off. And, you know, it's golf, right? It happens. It wasn't my best stuff, but did I have fun out there? Absolutely. You know, hearing the crowds and representing your country is one of the best feelings ever.
Yeah, I mean, I think I hung in to just the back nine, supposed to be the harder nine, and I played it 1 under, so I hit plenty of good shots, just not enough of them. So there's still 3 more days, lots of golf still to be played, so we'll keep checking away and try and chip away at that score. You can't chase it out there. Pins are tucked away, and it doesn't take much to be screwed or brilliant. So, yeah, just have to try and hit a few more fairways and a few more greens tomorrow and give myself a few more chances.
That's Leona Maguire's disappointing opening day for them. Jack Woolley suffered defeat in his opening bout in Taekwondo. He was beaten 2-0 by Gashim Magomedov of Azerbaijan. Jack had gone in higher ranked of the two Taekwondons in advance of that. They have a very unusual repechage system in Taekwondo, which, because Magomedov made it all the way to the final, Jack has been reinstated into what is effectively a two-fight box-off, which would secure him one of two bronze medals on offer. But the way the draw has played out and the way the competition played out, in order to secure a bronze medal, he will have to beat the competitors who are ranked second and then first overall in the competition this evening. He's back in action in about an hour's time. Finn Lynch finished eighth in the men's dinghy medal race. It left him with a 10th place ranking overall at the end of the competition. And he's been speaking to the BBC's Shirley Robertson about what has been a very difficult week in Marseille.
Yeah, halfway through it wasn't looking so hot. I was 25th and we had to rearrange my goals a little bit, and then the goal was to make it into the top 10, so I'm happy with how I bounced back during the week, but obviously I wanted to be a bit higher up, but yeah, happy with how I could fight to make it into the medal race.
A lot of the big names fell away during this week, so massive congratulations to make it there. You know, how pleased are you with your performance and what has been a really difficult week?
I'm happy that I could end the Olympic cycle and the Olympics sailing well. I wasn't sailing well at the start of the regatta, and but the Olympics is a crazy event. People can shoot up and down the leaderboard like not any other event. So I knew that if I kept my head down and just tried my best until the very, very end, that it could come good. And that was finishing 10th. So yeah, I'm happy with the effort I put in.
It's very important to contextualise 10th at the Olympic Games. That is quite the achievement. So we've got about an hour and 20 minutes until Rashida is on the track, Shane. We're going to have coverage of the evening's athletics over on Radio 1 after 7 o'clock your time, and coverage, of course, across RT2 television and all the RT digital platforms across the evening as day 12 of the Olympics rolls on.
Great stuff, Damien O'Mara. Thank you very much for that, gentlemen. So we are wishing Jack and Rashida the very best of luck this evening. Listen, before we take a break, actually, Keith Tracy, you were briefly mentioning this off-air as well. We were chatting about Kelly at the top of the show. And you were mentioning you're from around that area as well, so you would have been friendly with her brother Chris, who was in Iceland at the moment, coaching football.
Yeah,
coach
Chris,
at the moment.
Christopher's over in Iceland at the moment. Yeah. I think he was the one that sent out the tweet about Heimar Helgrimsson back in 2018.
He was actually, yeah.
So yeah. There's good stock in the family, and Chris was actually in the same year as my brother Martin, growing up in O'Connell's, and Christopher actually came to my going away party when I was 15, just before they left for Blackburn, and everybody gives you a card, you know, all the best over in England, Keith. I hope you do well. But I eventually got round to opening Christopher Harrington's letter to me, and it was just line after line, paragraph after paragraph of just inspirational stuff telling me I was good enough to go and do it. Don't go over there and be another statistic, don't be another number. And it was just really inspiring stuff. At 15, I took
how
one.
How old was Chris when he...
Well, he'd be the same age as my brother Martin, so 2 years older than me, probably 17, maybe bordering on 18.
Yeah.
So
pretty young man,
a real young man, but he was one of those I would play for above myself in school, and Christopher would play, and I hope he doesn't mind me saying, just couldn't really kick snow off a rope, but he had everything. In between the years, he was a brilliant footballer, very, very professional, and it's just knowing Christopher like I do, it's absolutely no surprise to me that Kelly has gone on, because I think it's just bred into the family that they're extremely strong mentally and brilliant role models for people in and around the North and the sea.
Yeah, no, Jackie Hurley had a brilliant interview with Christopher, Kelly's wife Mandy, and I think Joe's is the other brother as well, after the fight yesterday, which was brilliant as well. And that letter stuck with you.
It made a
genuine impact with you.
I brought a handful of them over with me. There was a couple of aunties and uncles that wrote a couple of nice things, and I had a pigeonhole at Blackburn when I first went, so I would keep some nice little keepsakes, and Christopher's letter actually kept meddling into there, which for somebody outside the family was quite a big thing for me. So Yeah, it's great. I just I worry now because they painted all the bins around Kelly's house gold, so I just wonder what they're going to start painting now for her.
Well, she said she didn't want to bust down Portland Road, so she's going to go down Portland Road.
I tell you what,
so.
she deserves a statue. To be fair, double Olympian, double gold medalist. It's unbelievable stuff. It's the stuff of dreams, so no praise too high for her.
Yeah, I know we've touched on it as well, and just final question for you, Keith, and we will be chatting soccer, we'll be chatting camogie after the break as well, but... From someone who is from that area, like, what does, and I know Marie asked the question to a lot of the residents in Diamond Park, and there were some brilliant answers and some brilliant sound bites, and I think RT News played a clip before the semi-final. It was one of the residents like, I told you she'd lash her out of it, and it's just, it's absolutely brilliant. But what does it mean for you from someone who grew up around down the road from Kelly to see her on the world stage?
I just think it's absolutely brilliant. You know, we need as many role models in the North Inner City as we can get. We need as many positive role models, because it's very easy for kids to go down the wrong path. And when you see kids like Kelly who are born and bred in the area and don't shy away from being from the area, tell everybody who will listen, I'm from the area and I came good. And that's what we need, role models, inspirational people. And Kelly is definitely that. And, you know, sometimes you can see these, you know, superstars on the telly and you think, I can never get there. But Kelly is seen walking around the area. She stops and she talks to people in the area. And it just makes that little step, it's a huge step to come from there to a gold medalist. But if you can see it, you can become it. And Kelly's just brilliant to be able to point out to little girls in the area, little boys in the area, if she did it, why can't you?
Absolutely. Absolutely. It is amazing. It is absolutely brilliant, particularly for Dublin One as well. So, again, very well done to Kelly and very well done to all of the Team Ireland athletes. And hopefully we will be saying very well done to Jack Woolley and Rashida Adeleke later on this evening. We're taking a short break. We're chatting camogie next. And then we will be finishing up the show with more football chat with Keith Tracy. Stick with us here in Game On 2FM.
Game On.
Camogie.
Now, it is time to chat camogie here on Game On this evening as we look forward to what hopefully will be a classic camogie All-Ireland final on Sunday. 5:15 throw-in in Crow Park. Cork take on Galway, the reigning champions. Cork looking to retain their title against their Galway champions in 2021. Aoife Murray joins us. Before we get Aoife's thoughts on this big one, let us hear from two of the players who will be featuring on Sunday. Galway's Roisin Black on first, Cork's Laura Hayes.
Yeah, I suppose us and Galway have been definitely big rivals the whole way back. We always love playing each other. It's always a really tough game, very competitive and free-flowing, which is kind of the best games that any player wants to play. So yeah, look, I suppose we know each other well, but coming into the final now, there's a lot to be answered, so we'll see who comes out on top. Yeah, we played Galway twice this year. We played them in the league and we played them in championship already, so they beat us in the league and we beat them in championship, so it's definitely level pegging going in. I'd say the last one is winner takes all.
Yeah, whenever we play Cork, it's really intense games and it really comes down to the wire. We know that Cork are a great team and, you know, they're going to be raring to go now and to get back-to-back All-Ireland, so we know that it's going to be a really difficult challenge ahead of us, but, you know, we're going to focus on ourselves and give our best shot as well.
How much will this mean if you can win the All-Ireland?
It'd mean everything, you know, not just for ourselves, but our family, for our clubs, for our county, for our management. You know, everyone's worked really hard behind the scenes, so it would mean the world, yeah.
So that was Laura Hayes of Cork and Roisin Black of Galway speaking to Marty Morrissey during the week. Aoife, as I mentioned, this is hopefully going to be a classic. Will this be a free-flowing, entertaining, unbelievable final? Or the big caveat, will this be a bit tetchy? Perhaps at the start, two teams just trying to find each other out.
You'd love to go straight to the classic, right? Wouldn't you? You know, but I think just even looking at how both teams have set up, I suppose, throughout the championship, they are quite similar in the sense that they try to pack out the field, have one or two targets up top and switch. So it is hard to overly see that being a classic with a packed kind of middle third, if you want to call it. For camogie, I think it would be one of the best showcases if Galway and Cork fully went at it Sunday evening. I think it would be the greatest way of selling the game to the public. Certainly both teams have the talent and the ability, but will it be a little bit more tactical potentially? I think for the purists it mightn't be as entertaining. I really hope both teams get the going out there and hurl. But I would worry that it'll be a bit more tactical. It might come to life towards that last quarter. And I think that'll be one of the more interesting ones. for one team, it'll be a classic because they'll win. You know, it'll be a one-sided classic, whether it's by 1 point or 3 points or 10. So yeah, that would be my biggest worry. That it'll be a bit more of a tactical, feeding each other out for 50 minutes of a game.
So who are better placed to handle the pressure of the occasion, the champions or the challengers on Sunday?
I would go back to look at maybe just how the body language has been. Maybe this championship, it's probably the only thing I can really look at, because Cork have had a bit of a smash every team journey. Galway have had to figure things out. And it's the one thing I will always say about that Galway team, hats off to Colm Murray with that environment that he's created. You know, even playing not to their potential, they've always found a way. 9 times out of 10, they found a way to win that game. In particular, look at that semi-final, and I go back to what I said last week. You had Tipperary, who were trying not to lose it, and you had Galway trying to win it. And, you know, they passed each other out coming into the final furlong of that game. So I think you've Galway going in there going, we're going up against last year's All-Ireland champions. We know we've kind of had one over them the last number of years. Yes, they beat us in the semi-final last year, albeit probably one of Galway's poorest performances. Not to take away from Cork's victory, but Galway were not themselves that day. And in fairness to Cork, they found a way that day to just get over the line, because that's all they cared about, was finally beating Galway in one of the biggest games of the year. So come Sunday, who's going to be able to handle it better? I think that's just all down to the environment that the management team will create over, I suppose, the past week and the weekend coming. I would probably say Cork should be going into it with a huge amount of confidence. They did it last year. They got a monkey off their back as well with beating Galway in the semi-final last year and beating them in the championship this year. So if I had to edge it, I would say Cork potentially should be able to enjoy maybe the moments leading up to the game a little bit more than Galway potentially.
I was listening, it was a really interesting chat you had last week reviewing the semi-finals, and obviously Cork had a handy enough win against Dublin, whereas you mentioned there, Galway just got over the line. They had an absolutely brilliant quarter-final win as well. So will Galway be at that match intensity, or fatigue is the wrong word, but just having that run of matches, would you prefer to have the run of matches, I suppose, is that cliched way of asking the question, or Cork be a bit more rested coming into it full of confidence?
Look, again, I'd go back to how it depends on how the management have managed the loading on their players. You know, there's so many eyes on them now through sports science, through GPS, etc., all that data that's being fed back. If, you know, I always go, there's one thing about having a GPS monitor or heart rate monitor on you, it's, do you have the right people that are able to read it, right? The one, are they reading it correctly? And two, do they have the management to actually take the advice of those that can read it correctly? So look, it totally, there's sometimes you love games going into a big game, and then sometimes you like just having no eyes on you, you know? Cork went out very quietly into that semi-final, steamrolled Dublin, who made it difficult for them in the first 15, 20 minutes, missed 2-2 or 2-3, you know, could have been a far more uncomfortable game for Cork. And then they've been nice and quiet for the 2 weeks, you know, outside of the usual interviews that they have to do. So if I was pushed to it, I'd probably be much prefer Cork's journey. Got your championship, top in the table, straight through to a semi-final, managed it, got subs on that pitch that absolutely finished the game as strong as the first 15 that started it. Galway, could they become a little bit leggy, a little bit battle-worn? A battle-worn Galway are such a tough team to get past, though, because, you know, one, they have huge talent and ability. Like, they are some of the nicest hurlers you'll see. But two, and this is no offence to Galway people, but they're stubborn, you know? They make it so hard to get past them. You know, so it's, Galway might like the fact they've had that extra game, and that could potentially stand to them. But push comes to shove, I'd much prefer Cork's journey.
I think stubborn can be a positive in this context for sure. Listen, it's Wednesday evening. We don't know the starting 15s at the moment, of course. But looking at the panels and looking how the teams have lined out thus far, where are the key battles going to be? What are the key contests in this final for you, Aoife?
I think, to be honest, I think you actually have to start with number one. You know, I think you have to look at both goalkeepers. I know I'm completely going into goalkeeper union here now, right?
That's completely fine. You take your time with that, Aoife. That's allowed.
But I think in fairness, you know, Sarah Healy came back into it. I did think it took her maybe a game or so to just maybe settle back into it, as well as her defenders just getting back working with Sarah again. And then you have Amy Lee in goals, who's been there for, geez, I'm trying to remember when Amy came onto the panel. Well, it's probably, what, you know, 10, 12 years of her experience. I think how they manage the space, right? So Galway like to have two up top or one up top. Cork always like to have two, and they constantly rotate that. Amy and Mackie just constantly switching, sometimes Orla in. So there's a huge switch around there. It is how can Sarah and Amy manage the space in Croke Park on Sunday will have a huge bearing, coupled with their puckouts and puckout strategies. So it's all well and good having a puckout strategy. One, can they execute it? And two, do they have the outfield players who can accept that game plan? For me, I think Amy just has a little bit more to offer with regards to that puck out. She goes short quite a lot. Semi-final, I think Sarah only went short, was it once, out to the cornerback, likes to go long, likes to go 65-70, but has a good return from going long. So if you were Cork, you're going to try and force her to go short as much as possible, give it to the cornerbacks, let them have it and see what happens with it. And then on the counter, you're going to say, try and get Amy to go as long. Now, she's got great, both have great strikes as well of them. So I think that's going to be a fascinating battle and who comes out, who can manage that game better from number one. I think the second part of that, again, it's probably up towards the goal side of things. It is Cork's inside forward line, which were destroying everybody in the championship. And I have to give it to Dublin, apologies, in that semi-final, because they kept Amy O'Connor and Katrina Mackie so quiet. Mm-hmm. It was probably the quietest semi-final of both of them, just with the calibre of players that they are. I thought like Emma Byrne just did such a solid job. So have Galway found out something about how Dublin went about that? And then equally, you flip that over to Dublin, or to Galway, and just how reliant they are on Mallon inside. And with Cork, they've got a few man markers that they can go and sacrifice and put on it. You know, you could imagine the likes of Pam or Maeve going on, and just that would be a phenomenal battle and how they actually manage that. I think what was interesting was once Aoife O'Donoghue got into that game in the semi-final, she was a super second option. So it might have been Mallon plus Aoife or Aoife plus Mallon. I think that is that's a real interesting ball plus one approach for Galway. So how they manage Mallon, I do think Cork have the defenders that they can just go and sacrifice and just say, you just stick to her and annoy the hell out of her. All day, equally, I thought she handled the pressure superbly in that semi-final. So I think they're going to be two really, really interesting parts of the field. And then equally, I do think another section of it is who will be able to get more scores from outside the scoring zone. You know, with inside that 45, I think if you look at the semi-final, Galway and Cork both actually scored the majority of their scores from within that 45. So who will have the longer strikers of the ball? Can the likes of Laura Hayes, Saoirse McCarthy from Cork side of it, Ashton Thompson equally, popping the ball over from 65 out? And then can Galway get the likes of Carrie Dolan getting points, not from freeze, but from play from the 65 out? So there's a super amount of battles that can go on there, but I certainly think it probably starts with the Golden.
Follow up just on the Galway offensive strategy, and I want to put the scoreline of 112 to you, because Cork scored 112 in 2021 and 22 in the finals. It wasn't enough. Galway scored 112 in the quarterfinal and semi-final this year to get over the line. Is 112 going to be enough in an All-Ireland final to win you a championship?
It is. Listen, it is, because you think the other team has a defence that can hold the other team to 111? You know?
Yeah. This boils back down to the one point or more mantra.
It's one point or more, exactly, right? And, you know, it is trying to keep, you know, if you're out there and you're goalkeepers, you're just trying to keep that ball out of the net. Right, because that could be the decider. because you're now expecting 4 points to beat that one score. You know, so I think it could come down to something along those lines, Shane. If one team gets a goal, can the other team come back and get 4 points against, you know, two extremely good, extremely strong defensive structures? So that is how important, and that's why I go back to how either goalkeeper manages the space net out in front of them.
When we strip it all back, when it comes down to on the day, who are you siding with? I think I've an inkling that you're going perhaps with Cork, Aoife, but head over heart here.
and in fairness, right, I have gone probably against Cork in a huge amount of the finals over the last number of years, but I've only ever done that on form. I've just had to look at form book. Sometimes that goes out the window for a final, right? But for me, I am siding with Cork just because of how they've gone about their business in the championship. I actually think I'd only be saying Galway just to say Galway if I didn't go with how the teams performed in the championship. With that said, though, I think Galway are so battle-hardened. Like, I just loved how they figured out a way to win. Like, they just figured it out. And what's more impressive was, I don't think that necessarily came from the sideline. You know, he had experienced players on the pitch that figured it out. You know, didn't need a whole lot of instructions, figured out of how to win this game. So I think it's going to be tight. I really hope they both go out. Yeah, of course, you have a process and you have a game plan. I just hope everybody goes out and can enjoy and see just what two unbelievably talented players and people that will run out onto that pitch on Sunday. I hope everybody gets a chance to actually just see how good they are, and they get their reward. They get to go out and show their skills out there. But for me, I'm siding with Cork simply because of just how they've gone about their business throughout the championship.
Game on. Camogie.
Now, that chat with Aoife Murray was recorded a little bit earlier on today, and the full conversation will be podcasted later on this evening, because there are some great yarns about Aoife's All-Ireland Final Day experiences as well. So a full 20-odd minutes conversation with Aoife Murray ahead of Cork Galway will be available on the podcast later on. We're taking a short break, and then we are back with Keith Tracy and all things football.
Game on.
Football.
Now, you're very welcome back to Game On. Keith Tracy is here at the Chat Association Football. Keith, James McLean has signed a new two-year contract with Wrexham. Lee Carsey looks set to be managing England against Ireland. But let us begin our conversation a bit closer to home. Two European matches tomorrow. Rovers are in Slovenia. 7:15 kick-off for their Europa League third round qualifier. However, news today emerging, and credit to Irish Independent journalist Sean O'Connor, spotted on Twitter, Johnny Kenny is out of tomorrow night's match and remains sidelined for a couple of weeks. Sean Hoare is back fit, but Rory Gaffney remains out injured. How big of a blow is that? Because he was in a bit of a run of form, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was in a run of form, and I don't think you can shy away from it. I do think it'll be a blow, but I'm sure Shamrock Rovers, Stephen Bradley in particular, will be thinking there's still enough goals in our team to go and compete against Celjay. And again, like, people are asking me how much of a chance the Rovers have on this. It's really difficult to know. Celjay have only two league games played so far this season, so it's very, very hard to try and get a feel of what type of team they are, how they play. From what I've seen, they play a 4-3-3. They do have some goals in them, but from a Shamrock Rovers point of view, I think if you go back to the second leg against Sparta Prague, I know they lost the game 4-2, but they competed really, really well. They scored two goals over there away from home, which not a lot of teams, they won't go there and score a goal. So look, there's indicators are that Rovers are playing an awful lot better in Europe, and the carrot is so big. If they can win this game, you know, it's group stage European football, the finances are going to be huge. So look, it's big, big carrot for Shamrock Rovers. I'm hopeful, but again, it's a little bit of a step into the unknown of what we're going to get from Celjay. So we'll see tomorrow night.
In your expert opinion, if they get the group stages football, does that rule them out of the title race then? Derry City and Shelburne fans are hanging on your every word.
I was just about to say, spoke like a true Shelburne fan. I would think so, yeah. Look, I think Shelburne have enough in the locker. They've only lost three games so far this season. I think they would have to fall off a cliff edge. The wheels would have to come off. And I know they've lost Jarvis. They've lost one or two others. Sean Boyd is struggling with injury. So look, it's not beyond the realms of possibility that he could get caught. But when I look at Damien Duff, when I look at Shelburne, how you know, well maintained they are, how rigid they are, how they go about things, I don't see them going and losing a whole host of games, I have to be honest. I think Rovers will pick up a decent amount of points between now and the end of the season, but I just don't see Shelburne being caught, to be honest with you. But, you know, Shamrock Rovers, in terms of getting to European group stage football, if you can do that, what an achievement would be. Because for me, it doesn't look like they're going to be in terms of the league race.
Mm. No news as well on the hearing, reported hearing of Shamrock Rovers and Bowes regarding their cup match and the eligibility of Dawson Devoy in that match as well. There were reports, newspaper reports, that there was a hearing today, but nothing, no white smoke basically as of yet. So who knows, Rovers could still be on for a treble.
I'm sitting here saying how poor their domestic campaign has been. They could still come back from the dead, win the FAI Cup and possibly win the league. So put me in my place.
That's conjecture for now. Pats are also in European action tomorrow, 7:45 in Talas Stadium, actually, against Sabah of Azerbaijan. You've hung me out the drive for being a Shells fan. I know you've a soft spot for Pats, Keith. So would you be confident for Pats at home? Well, I was going to say at home, in Dublin against Sabah.
Yeah, it's a fairly similar story. Sabah have only played one league game, so you're trying to get a feel of what they're like. So I've looked back at their last European games. They beat Maccabi Haifa to get to this stage in the competition. The one thing for me is they beat Maccabi Haifa 3-0 in the first leg, but lost the second leg 6-3. So they can concede goals, they can also score goals. There's a little bit there, but look, what Pats did against Vaduz over the two legs, I thought they were really good. The first leg in particular, the Joe Redmond header in around the 80th minute proved to be crucial. So look, I think Pats are getting better. When you look at El Bouzebi, he's somebody who really excites me. I've only seen him a handful of times since he's made the move to St. Pat's. Mulroney has hit a bit of form, especially in Europe. And Aidan Keane coming in the door, got a goal against Sligo. I know it was a very controversial penalty. It was two very controversial penalties on the night. But for Aidan Keane, new club, getting off to a great start. So yeah, the indicators for Pats are they're starting to find form under Stephen Kenny. But again, it's a step into the unknown. Not quite sure what Sabah are going to do. But, you know, going over to Azerbaijan in the second leg, it's going to be hot. It's going to be humid. You know, keeping the ball is going to be at a premium. So it's going to be very difficult for them over there. So I think they will need a buffer going over there. They'll have to win the game tomorrow night for me.
I know Pats were hoping to get the match with Galway called off on Sunday. It is going ahead. 3 p.m. Aim in DC Park. Galway fifth in the table against St. Pat's, seventh in the table as well. Because as you mentioned then, you've a trip to Azerbaijan. Would players be dreading that? Well, I say dreading it. They could be. It could be on a knife edge. You could have a chance of progressing in Europe. So obviously, that is the carrot at the end of the stick, really.
Yeah. Well, look,
players, it's just tough going over.
It's very, very tough. And look, I understand, and people would say, oh well, Keith is a Pats fan or a Pats follower, so this is why he's saying.
Now,
this,
to be fair, sorry, I did hang out driving that, but you have been nothing but objective. I must say, and I mean that sincerely.
I try my best. But look, I think European Irish teams that are in Europe, the FAI, whoever it is, needs to make a judgment call. We need to give them every chance. And people say, oh, well, he's a Pats fan, that's why he's saying this. I would say the same for Shelbourne, Shamrock Rovers, Bowes, Dundalk, whoever it is in Europe. And look, it might probably can't be next year because we're starting to get a feel of who's going to be in the European race. But why not 2027, 2028, say, look, whoever's in Europe, we're going to manipulate the fixture so we can help them when they're in there. Because we need as much help as we can get. It would help the league better. Everybody wants that, but at times I feel like we're cutting our nose off despite our face, so it's really difficult. Yeah.
As I mentioned, 7:45 tomorrow, 7:15 for the Rovers match. You're on commentary on Solid Sport. It's available on a pay-per-view streaming platform, both of those matches. Lee Carsley, we touched on it briefly yesterday on the show, and Marie did basically as well, and the BBC are going big in it now. Listen, it's one of those when you're kind of looking at it and you're just like, oh, what could have been, perhaps what could have been. But they've coined the term now, Cars Ball. That's what Ireland has missed out on, this free-flowing attacking play, basically everything that Lee Carsley wasn't as a player.
Yeah, well, look, I don't think Cars Ball could ever come to Ireland because we haven't got the players to implement it. And I feel like I'm always putting water on people's fire. They want to get behind this Irish team. They're trying to convince me we've got young up-and-coming players, and we do, we have all of that, but I still think we need a very simplistic game plan. And it must be a weird feeling for Lee Carsley, obviously flirting with the Irish job for so long. I was one who was threw me 2 cents in, and I wanted Carsley to get it because I know he's a very proud Irish man. I think he's clever enough to know that this Irish team has to play a different way, and having played so well for Ireland, I think he understands how we need to go about things. But you know, it is what it is. It looks like he'll be in the opposition dressing room, and be giving everything for the English to get the win. But look, I think for Heimer Hamgerson, what a great first game. Obviously, he has history with the English as well. Back in 2016, his Icelandic team knocked him out of the World Cup. So, look, it's a game that really gets my juices flowing. Do I expect us to win it? Probably not. Am I overly worried about who's in the opposition dugout? Not really, but I'd love Carsley to get it. I know he's a very proud Irish man. It's probably not something you can say as he takes the if he does take the English job, but it'd be very, very hard. It's probably one of the most sought-after jobs in world football, so no hard feelings for him if he does go on to take it.
Well, someday, who knows, he might be manager of the Irish team. Liverpool linked with a move for Spanish midfielder Zubimendi. Chelsea working on a deal to sign Atletico's Omar Dion. Speaking of Chelsea, actually, not a great pre-season in the US. Other stories, of course, Morata and Rodri banned for Gibraltar Espanyol chant as well, which caused a bit of political unrest. But for Chelsea as well, going into the season, I know Paul was on yesterday. I missed the chance to pose this question when I saw him in the corridor. But Gallagher going to Atletico Madrid, Dewsbury Hall might be coming in as well. Early pressure on a new manager.
Yeah, I think Enzo Maresca will be under all sorts of pressure. A manager coming in from Leicester, I know they did really well in the Championship, but the fact that the manager going out the door feels like he has a better CV than the one coming in the door just makes you know, he needs to hit the ground running. And I look at the Conor Gallagher thing, and I've seen Sky Sports' stats, he's forced in this and he's forced in that. Conor Gallagher for me is somebody who runs around and gets the ball back, and I don't mean that in a negative way. There, people, you need that. You've got that Enzo Fernandez with that little bit of class, so you need somebody to be a little bit more workmanlike. Conor Gallagher can do that. Dewsbury Hall for me is somebody who is a very, very good Championship player. Again, excellent with Leicester. I'm not saying he can't go and be the mainstay in the Chelsea team, but for me, there's building blocks need to be put in place there. I don't think he's quite ready for that, but with the manager being an ex-Leicester manager, bringing Dewsbury Hall into the club, I just feel like he's going to play. I feel like the manager fancies him. That's why he's brought him from Leicester with him. And I don't think he's quite ready. And I just think it's going to be Enzo Maresca's, you know, nail in the coffin. I don't think he's going to last till Christmas. And the more I look at that Chelsea team, there's such high turnovers. There's so many going out, so many coming in. New manager, new philosophies, new owners. It just looks like chaos. And I can't see why any top European player would be attracted to it. I know people will be shouting finances, but sometimes football has to mean a bit more. You know, you can think, it's just crazy. It's chaos going into that dressing room. So it's difficult to hit the ground running, and somebody who's coming from a Championship background, somebody who's had, you know, limited Premiership experience, I think it's going to be an uphill battle, and I have question marks over whether Dewsbury Hall is actually good enough to be that player that Chelsea need him to be.
Well, certainly one to watch for now. Keith, great football chat, well rounded up, and that rounds up our show. Big thanks to Ron and Lorla and Laura Lee Davis working on this evening's show. Rachel May Hannon is up next with the new music show, so do stay tuned to 2FM. We're going to take a short ad break and check in with the news desk. First Game On is back tomorrow, 6 o'clock, with Ruby Walsh.